like to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 17. Read verses 14 through 21. Mark records this in Mark chapter 9, and Luke records this in Luke chapter 9. We'll read Matthew 17, verses 14 through verse 21. When they, that would be Jesus, Peter, James, and John, were come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and often into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. Then came the disciples to Jesus apart, and said, Why could not we cast him out? And Jesus said unto them, Because of your unbelief, for verily I say unto you, if ye have faith as a grain of a mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, Remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. Howbeit, this kind, that is, this kind of faith, goeth not out but by prayer and fasting. We see that this miracle takes place after Jesus and Peter and James and John have come down from the mountain of Transfiguration. As they get to the bottom of that mountain, we see that the other nine apostles were surrounded by a multitude of people, and these people were questioning the apostles, and the occasion of their questioning was that there was a father who brought his demon-possessed son to the apostles, and they could not heal him or cure him. This brought on all the questions and attacks upon the apostles, and we see that when Jesus and Peter, James, and John come down from the mount, the multitude rushed to them, and we see one in that multitude, of course, was the father of this demon-possessed son, and he then began to relate what had happened unto Jesus Christ and how he brought his son unto the apostles, and they could not cure him. And as he's relating this story to Christ, he gives many of the details concerning the condition of his son. And we want to look at nine things concerning him, but we've already looked at four. First of all, he was under the control of this demon. We read in Mark chapter 9 and verse 18 that the demon taketh him. That is, he was under the control of the demon. The demon would just take him wherever the demon wanted him to go. So he was in bondage. He was in control of this demonic force. Secondly, we see from Matthew 17 and verse 15 that he was a lunatic. That is, he was insane. He was a maniac. He was out of his mind. And all of this is the result of this demon. We see also that he was painfully vexed. We see in Matthew 17 in verse 15 that in addition to being a lunatic, he was sore or painfully vexed. And to be vexed is to be irritated and to be harassed. So he was, this demon was a source of irritation to him, so much so that it was painful. It was a source of harassment to him, so much so, again, that it was painful. He was sore vexed. And then we saw also that he was suicidal. In Matthew 17 and verse 15 has a result of the fact that he was a lunatic, has a result of the fact that he was being vexed or harassed and irritated by this demon, and by the fact that he was under the control of this demon. We see that he oftentimes would just fall into the fire, and other times he would just fall into the water. Perhaps the demon would cast him into the fire. Perhaps the demon would cast him into the water. But again, this was for self-destruction. So this man, because of this demon, his son is out of his mind. He lives in torment. He's in misery. And he very, very frequently tries to commit suicide. So we can only imagine that this father no doubt felt a great burden, and this father was greatly pained at seeing his son in this condition. And of course, the son is in terrible condition. We see also in Mark chapter 9, we see a fifth thing concerning this son. In Mark chapter 9 and verse 17, and one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb or mute spirit. So he could not speak. This, because of the demon, again, the demon was a mute spirit. In other words, the demon caused this muteness, and we see that as a result the son could not speak. We see also in Mark chapter 9 and verse 25, Mark 9 verse 25, that when Jesus saw the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, Thou dumb and deaf spirit. So this spirit caused deafness as well. So we see that there was no communicating with this son. There was no way to reason with him. He could not speak. He could not hear. So to reason with him was a very, very difficult thing. And this, of course, would add to the burden, add to the stress of the father. As we've already said, in healing this son, he not only delivered the son from his misery, but he also delivered the father from his misery as well. So he was deaf. We see also he was being constantly harmed. Physically, he was being harmed. Notice in Mark chapter 9 and verse 18, And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. We see the demon takes him. Again, he's under the control of the demon, and teareth him. That is, the demon is breaking him. The demon is shattering him. The demon throws him into convulsions, and he foameth, just like a mad animal would, and gnasheth with his teeth, which speaks of rage. So this son has many, 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 many problems. And the sad words are that when this father brought him to the apostles, we see Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record, and they could not. They could not. They could not heal him. They could do nothing for this individual. And this, of course, just added to the burden of the father. So we see he was being harmed by this demon, and he would gnash with his teeth. That is, he was in a spirit of rage. And on top of all of that, he was getting worse. He was getting worse. In Mark chapter 9, verse 18, "And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth," and notice, "and pineth away." That is, he was in a state of decay. He was in a state of decline. That is, he was continually getting worse. There was nothing that was improving in him. Perhaps one day might be better than the next, but overall, he's not getting better. He's getting worse and worse and worse. And if you had a child in this condition, I suppose that you would look for signs of improvement in some areas. And you would grab unto anything that you saw that looked like an improvement. But this father could not do that. Everywhere he looked, his son was getting worse. Everything about his son was getting worse. And the son, of course, could not continue to live in this condition. He was pining away. He was going to be destroyed by this demon. We see also that he was defiled. Notice in Mark chapter 9, verse 25. Mark chapter 9, verse 25. "When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit." He rebuked the foul or the repulsive spirit. What that means is that this demon caused this young man to do disgusting and repulsive things, whatever they might have been. But he was under the control of a foul spirit. We see in Luke's account, in Luke chapter 9, verse 42, Luke 9, verse 42, "And as he was yet a coming, the devil threw him down and tear him, and Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit." He was unclean, that is, filthy and defiling. So this son, on top of all his physical, mental, emotional problems, he behaved himself in a repulsive way, in a disgusting way, and his life was filled with defilement. And again, for years, the father had dealt with this affliction of his son. Mark records, and notice in Mark chapter 9, verse 21, Jesus had asked the father, "How long ago is it since he came unto him?" That is, the demon. How long has he been in this condition? How long has he been under the control of this demon? In verse 21, the answer comes, "And he said, of a child." Of a child. It makes us believe that by this time he was perhaps a young man, and he had been in this condition, and it just continually got worse. He had been in this condition from the time that he was a child. So this is something that had been going on, no doubt, for years. And no doubt, the father tried to, on more than one occasion, I'm sure that when he brought his son to the apostles and pleaded with them to heal his son, I'm sure that's not the only time that this father tried to get help for his son. I imagine there were many, many, many times where the father sought help for his son. And the father, no doubt, tried many, many different things. But no matter what he tried, no matter where he went, they could not. Nobody could help this individual. Nobody could help the son. Nobody could really help the father. And no doubt the son is getting worse and worse and worse. But no doubt the father is getting worse also. That is, he's becoming more and more desperate. He's becoming more and more tired. And when we see his desperation, we see his exhaustion. And notice in Mark chapter 9 and verse 22, in his appeal to Christ, he says here in Mark 9 verse 22, "And oftentimes it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him." And then notice what he says. "If thou canst do anything." If thou canst do anything. He's not even asking now that Christ would cure his son. He's saying, "If you can do anything to give us some relief." He's not asking for a cure. Because I believe by this time he'd given up on that. But he says, "Lord, if you could just do anything, it doesn't matter. Anything that would give us some relief." And then he goes on and says, "Have compassion on us." On us. Myself and my son. Help us. So in that appeal to Christ, we see his desperation. We see he has come to the point of exhaustion. And now just anything will do. And he brought his son to the apostles. And this was his appeal. But they could do nothing. There wasn't anything they could do. And if someone comes to you and says, "Please help me," just anything, and you cannot. That just adds to their frustration. That just adds to their desperation. That just adds to their exhaustion. But these are the people who will... This is the condition that we have to get in, sad to say. Many times before we truly come, we have to be desperate. We have to be desperate. Many times God is the last resort. We've tried everything, and now we found out nothing works, so I guess we'll try the Lord. And that's the way many, many people operate. God is their fire escape. After they've tried everything else, after they're at their wit's end. And we don't criticize those people. I wish they would go to the Lord from the beginning, but at least they've come. At least they've gotten to the point where they realize that God is the only one. And that certainly was the state that this man was in. He says, "Have compassion on us and help us." They were both suffering terribly in different ways. In different ways they were suffering. In different ways the father and the son were afflicted. In different ways the father and son were hurting. And no doubt both. And that's why he says, "Have compassion on us and help us." Both needed a miracle from the Lord. Both needed help. They both needed what only God could give. They both had in their lives more than a human being could possibly bear. And so they come to God in desperation. Jesus, after all this transpired, rebuked the faith of the multitude and challenged the faith of this father. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record this, but let's look at Matthew's account in Matthew 17, verse 17. Okay, so this father has come. He has made his appeal to Christ. The multitude is present. The apostles are present. Then Jesus answered and said, he answered the Father. But in so doing, he is speaking and rebuking the entire multitude. He says, O faithless and perverse, crooked, twisted generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? He's saying, will you not learn? Will you ever learn? They have seen miracle upon miracle, and yet they still didn't get it. And Jesus then says, Bring him to me. But Jesus also had a word of challenge, a word of encouragement to the Father concerning faith. He rebuked the faith of the multitude. How long? Why will you not believe me? And then notice in Mark chapter 9, verse 23. Jesus said unto him, again, this is in response to, have compassion on us and help us. This is right after Jesus has rebuked the multitude for their lack of faith. And Jesus said unto him, the Father, if thou canst believe. Remember, he just asked, Lord, if you can do anything. And now he says to the Father, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. It's as if Jesus said, what do you believe I can do with your son? If thou canst believe, all things are possible. And I believe the Lord gave this man faith, because faith is always the gift of God. In verse 24, and straightway, immediately, without thinking about it at all, the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. I believe. That is, I believe. The apostles could not, but I believe that you can. But with that, he also realized, and this is something we must always realize, there was a part of him that did not believe. He said, Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief. He said, Lord, I believe you can. But there's a part of me that doubts. Help thou my unbelief. And we're all that way. We're all that way if we're honest. We can say, I believe God will supply my needs. But there's a part of us that doubts it. That's the part of us that comes up with plan B just in case. Just in case God doesn't come through. There's always a part of us that's that fleshly part. There's always a part of us that has some doubt. Help thou my unbelief. And I believe every child of God can truthfully say, I believe. But we need to also be truthful enough to say, Lord, I need you to help that part of me that doesn't believe. Let's look to the Lord. We're to